And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 816. We're back to your team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We head to the Pacific Northwest, a team that was oh so close to heading to the big dance this past year. A nice run for the Seattle Mariners. And in order to help me break down Big Dumper and Company in Seattle, you can find his work at Rotoballer, at RotoViz, at Baseball HQ. He's a football and a baseball mastermind. He's been nominated for 3 FSWA awards. He's won 2 of them. You can find him on Twitter at Corbin_Young21. Corbin Young, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Yeah, just like we were talking about beforehand, it's just, you know, regular season football ends. And, you know, even though I've got some Seahawks in the, you know, NFL playoffs, it's shifting that brain to more baseball and more baseball. So usually you're the kickoff to me of like, all right, time to get a little more serious.
I love it. Like, you get you going here before you know, you'll be writing like an Arsenal report or something for HQ, and or something, or a Facts and Flukes column or something will be coming out over there. So, because I know my assignments for PT tomorrow start this week, so I know they're starting to slowly roll things out, and it's coming. So, yeah, looking forward to that. All right. Well, real quick, since you said Seahawks, this is going to come out after the Seahawks Niners game, but I live in a world where there's a bunch of Niners fans. I am not one of them. I told them the Seahawks are going to, you know, do their thing again. They all agree, actually. Let's assume the Seahawks win this game, Corbin. Do you think they have what it takes to get to the Super Bowl?
I mean, I think they do if the defense stays healthy and plays as well as they have been, and they continue being pretty effective with Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet running. And, you know, I think even in, I'd say, the latter half of the season, you know, we really haven't seen Sam Darnold and Jaxon Smith-Njigba do anything, you know, super amazing like we saw early in the season. So there might be a few things, you know, there, here and there. But, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, there's 3 NFC West teams. So it's like trying to avoid any of them, but that's not possible at this point, I guess. But, yeah, I think there's a good chance, you know, kind of with the defense and how they run the ball. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yep, looking forward to it. They've been pretty dominant and great to watch for me. So thoroughly enjoyed that. But we're here talking baseball, and let's talk Seattle Mariners. Before we get into the players that we will discuss, just off the bat here, how did you feel 2025 went?
Oh, man. I mean, there's some memories to be made for sure. I mean, even just making it to the playoffs, the last time we went to the playoffs, I didn't really like digest that. It was kind of like, oh, and maybe it was a little more real because I went and I brought my daughter to the Tigers game where it was like went to like 15 innings or whatever. And there were times where I was like questioning whether we keep staying. And I was like, nope, we've gone to inning 12 and 13. We're staying. But and then, yeah, I went to the one of the other playoff games against the Blue Jays. Another just like one of those environments where, you know, we'll see if it happens again. But just kind of you experience those things and you realize that you're so close. And it's a pretty neat environment after being, you know, living in this area past decade or so. And you're like, you're watching a bunch of just garbage teams with, you know, wasting Felix Hernandez and all that stuff. So, you know, when you're watching the team now, it's like, and you're watching Cal Raleigh and Big Dumper do kind of historic things, or every game you're just like, wow, you know, you're watching history. And it was a pretty cool season. So, you know, can't complain anything like that for sure.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch. I remember that night you took your daughter to the game because you're in the Discord with us at Bubba and the Blue, and you're like giving us updates. Like, first you told us you were going, we were all pumped for you because there's a large Pacific Northwest contingency in that Discord, like a very large one. So a lot of people rooting for you, and then you kind of got your play-by-plays. I think more so the next morning we got your thoughts because it was a little tough to, like, the Wi-Fi wasn't quite what we expected. A little too crowded that night in the stadium, but it sounded awesome. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk players. Let's get to it. And we're going to just start at the top with one of the just young phenoms. It's crazy to think that Julio Rodriguez is only 25 years old. He's been doing it year after year. A 30-30 season, his second in 4 years. He's gone at least 20-20 every single year, Corbin. And right now, over the last like 10 or so drafts, his ADP is around 10 or 11. I don't know why it would stop, but what are your thoughts on J-Rod as we enter his fifth season in the big leagues?
Yeah, I think I was looking back last year at our notes and just talking about how last year Julio had all these injuries and kind of banged up and stuff like that, and you know, pretty much stayed healthy and you know, did all the things. I mean, we'll see how those kind of, you know, those approach ages, because he's definitely pretty aggressive, right? He's, you know, he just sometimes he's really swinging and you're like, why? I think there was, might have been one of the playoff games, I was like, why are you even swinging at that? You know, I'm just like, there's some free swinging, but that also comes with great tools, right? We know kind of those skills are pretty, you know, strong in terms of exit velocity and athleticism and all that stuff. So, I mean, I would say, yeah, like we're talking about, he's kind of an elite fantasy asset on a team that's kind of built to win. And so, yeah, I feel a little more confident this time around, and maybe it's just because he was mostly healthy after last year.
Yep. No, I fully agree. Like, I was just looking right now as you're talking, his 230-30 seasons, over 700 plate appearances in those two seasons. So it's the health, to your point. And yeah, the free swinging's there. His strikeout rate did go up. It actually went down this past year, but yeah, it's who he is. He's a young ball player, and the consistency is ridiculous. And you get him at the back end of round one. The question everybody wants to know, and it's pretty tough to decide, I think we all think regression is coming, but to what extent? And that is for the big dumper himself, Cal Raleigh. A, one of the best nicknames, period. B, he backed it up literally this last season. 60 home runs, hit 247. Those are both career highs. 14 steals out of nowhere, career high. 110 runs, 125 RBIs, all career highs. Pretty simple stuff. Amazing season. His ADP is 18. So he's early second round right now. What are your thoughts on Raleigh entering this season? He'll only be 29, so he's not that old, but he put up 705 plate appearances last year.
Yeah, I mean, we knew the skills were there, right? And, you know, it just happened to kind of just line up, and everything was just amazing. And I think this is kind of, you know, when you're looking at a breakout season, this is kind of what it looks like, right? Whenever I'm writing, it's usually just like there's a bunch of skills and there's some luck and fortune, and both of those combined, you get those massive kind of seasons. Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely, you know, some, you know, regression. I mean, he's always going to be a guy that's going to have kind of better expected batting averages, because just because he hits the ball so dang hard, you know, so there might be some of those kind of contact kind of rate concerns. I mean, he is kind of under that kind of scary, like kind of 70% ish contact rate percentage. So that might be an issue, but yeah, I think the main thing to monitor is just, obviously the stolen bases, right? Like, I mean, when baseball HQ has those like stolen on base opportunity rates, and it went from 5% in 2024 to 11% in 2025. And, you know, we might think like, well, you know, at some point that might come back to bite him if we're playing every day. And, you know, he's probably one of the toughest players where he's just going to go out there regardless of what happens. But I mean, I'm trying to think of like, if we had a catcher go kind of like, you know, top 25 picks like this, and what I'd have to do some research on, like, is that a good thing to pay up for that? And I think he's probably, if I double check, yeah, he's like kind of the only catcher within top 50 picks with like William Contreras of that. So I feel like it's probably a bit rich, but I could see it if we're just banking on those massive plate appearances that we're probably not getting from, you know, any other catcher, because we know this guy's playing every day based on his defense and hitting. So
yeah, it's a tricky one for me, because I love catchers and I don't mind taking an early catcher. But like you said, this early, I'm usually like, okay, round three, I can think about the discussion. I prefer round four or five if I have my choices. But to your point, if he can sneak in another 650 to 700 plus plate appearances at a catcher's position, that's elite. So there's a lot that can be done there. They obviously want him to DH or catch. They want him in the lineup every day. Simple. Why wouldn't you? So, like, the argument is, it's a fun argument to have, because I don't think there's really a wrong answer to it. It's just kind of what your belief is and how you want to build around it, especially like to your point, if he can throw in 10 plus steals, like, you're not taking a zero anymore. And that's a big, big differentiation. So I have not been in on the early Cal Raleigh action yet, but like, the more I do my research, I'm starting to, okay, I could see a world where this fits. And that becomes interesting to me at least.
Yeah, and I think if you just kind of average, like, you know, the last two seasons, and you're, you know, instead of that kind of elite, like, 33-plus dollar player, and you're going, like, 20, mid-20s, like, that's maybe, you're maybe paying up a couple of rounds, like you're saying, but You know, if you're fine, just kind of, you know, not everybody's gonna, you know, break out and surpass their price, but yeah, I think it's the plate appearance thing, right? It's like, I mean, it's kind of feels like rare to have kind of a catcher that just like does everything well and trying to be in the lineup all the time. So
yep, fully agree. Let's go Randy Arozarena, another guy that like the batting average fluctuates year to year. It's kind of just been going down for the most part. Bounced back a little bit to 238 last year, but five straight seasons of 2020 baseball, which is to me pretty, pretty good. And Arozarena, even though he's that good, his ADP still around 100. Like he's not climbing up the leaderboards as one would expect. Maybe they're that worried about his batting average, but I've been taking him everywhere I can. I get eventually it's going to slow down, but you could pencil in 2020. I'm pretty excited. Maybe I'm naive. What are your thoughts on Randy Arozarena this year?
Yeah, continues to be one of the kind of most valuable players, outfielders from just that power speed standpoint, right? Just kind of 2020 potential on a regular basis. Yeah, I think you're right to hit on the batting average kind of issues with some of the contact kind of challenges. But he's kind of one of those weird players where he doesn't quite chase a ton, but he's kind of showing some patience from those swing rates. But he does kind of struggle to make contact. I think the other interesting thing is that, you know, like a lot of the Mariners, they've kind of bumped up the kind of stolen base rate in the past couple of years, but he used to be really awful at kind of converting stolen bases. Yeah. So like you look at kind of all the caught stealing and stuff like that, and it's like this year was like 83% stolen base kind of just conversions overall after kind of being under 70%. So, I mean, that feels like maybe a little unusual when you're kind of getting older, but it could just kind of be, you know, maybe a little, sharper or with some of the kind of stolen base or, you know, pickoff rules and stuff that might just be kind of one of those things that might have evened out. But I think the biggest boost and like, you know, this is something that we kind of noticed kind of late in the season, but like, about through late July, he was kind of in the middle of the Mariners lineup. And then, you know, like everyone else, we were like, why in the world is JP Crawford hitting in, you know, leadoff? And then they move Randy Arozarena into the leadoff spot. So I think there's a boost in value right there where you're hitting, you know, in front of Julio Rodriguez, Cal Raleigh, and Josh Naylor. And so there should be a boost in kind of runs and plate appearances there. So I think there might be kind of some sneaky value kind of based on that, assuming that continues, because I really don't see anyone else that's going to be like hitting leadoff for them unless they're going to like put Julio there or something, you know. But if they just stick with the Randy, Julio, Raleigh, Naylor, that's like a solid top four for sure.
That's their best top four, like you said. So yeah, that was going to be one of my questions. Do they stick with that? Because I was one of many, and I wasn't even a Mariners fan going, why is JP Crawford leading off right now? But yeah, some coaches are just stubborn in their ways until it finally changes, and it changed for the better. Let's talk Josh Naylor, who you mentioned, because he came over in the trade last year from Arizona, and all Josh Naylor did was steal 30 bases. A lot of them with the Mariners is the greatest part. Hit 20 home runs. Like the power we most of us could believe. The steals, where did that come from? Hit 295, was just an absolute stud. It's just one of those, like, does he run against the question? But I'm kind of leaning on what you're obviously going to tell me. But I'm leaning that everyone's stealing, it looks like, so far in Seattle. So maybe so. But Naylor's ADP is around 70, 75. So he kind of has to steal for me at that point. What are your thoughts on Josh Naylor?
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the best kind of trade deadline moves they made in a long time. When I was looking back, the Mariners have really been searching for a first baseman. You know, we were cycling through Ty France, can't forget a free agent, you know, acquisition of the year last year, Donovan Solano. I mean, Rowdy Tellez, gosh, like Luke Rayleigh. I mean, just so many great options. But, you know, so, you know, watching Rowdy Tellez, you know, I don't want to waste too much on Rowdy Tellez, but like the only thing I can remember is when he was playing first base and a runner came over and the runner ran into him and the runner was annihilated. He was standing on first base.
Brick wall.
Yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, 19 of the 30 stolen bases with Seattle. He was a monster in the playoffs, you know, like watching the playoffs. I mean, you know, I don't know how much kind of people take on that, but he was just clutch and helping him out. And so like that kind of sticks with me just kind of, and we're talking about recency bias. I mean, he's always got that high floor with the strong play discipline. You know, even though like we might think of him as being like a real power hitter, it's kind of more average than anything. Mostly probably because he hits too many ground balls and things like that. But so I think, you know, he's definitely one of those compilers, you know, and probably is more in that kind of 20 home run realm, but Yeah. So 20, he had a 20%, Josh Naylor had a 20% stolen base opportunity rate. That was like double of his career average at 9%.
That'll help.
So, you know, I don't think we can expect 20-30 to be a regular thing. I mean, based on this guy's body type, but I mean, I would love to see it, right? I mean, but I think something more reasonable is probably like 15 to 20 home runs, maybe 10 to 15 stolen bases is probably more reasonable. Again, this feels like a little rich, but, you know, I haven't looked at like if, you know, first base is just kind of ugly where it's like you're going to take a guy that's in a good lineup and, you know, he can hit kind of thing. So, yeah, I think if we're just like, again, kind of regressing the past couple of seasons of like just kind of the steals and home runs and we're kind of being more reasonable. Yeah, I mean, I might not be fully into him on at that price kind of based on this, you know, expecting the stolen base kind of opportunities up there. But I mean, I like the guy. It's hard, you know, I like realize standpoint. I love rooting for that guy. So yeah.
Yeah. That's been my biggest problem. I've been a huge Naylor fan in recent seasons, especially at his price tag every draft year. This year, you actually have to decide, okay, is the price right for once? Cause in the past, I always thought it was an easy answer. Like if I can convince myself he's going to get 15 steals, he's probably pretty close to, yeah, so this works. Cause to your first base question, it's like after him, you have Vinny P a little bit later, and then it's like 80 picks or so, and there's just chunks, and it starts going downhill from there. So it's an interesting, there's like, there's options as the draft goes on, but not the same, if that makes sense. So Naylor's one of kind of the last, if he could get you this, the power speed, one of the last top tier options for sure. So definitely interesting. If he hits cleanup in that lineup, there should be a lot of RBI potential. So that is another plus as well.
Right. It kind of gets ugly as I'm just scanning. Like, I don't know if how much confidence I have in somebody putting up numbers like Josh Naylor might kind of based on who's going behind. So you might just, it might be one of those where you're like, you'll take the kind of dip on some of the other things based on the playing time and being in a pretty solid lineup.
Agreed. All right, let's talk Victor Robles. Had that serious injury last year he suffered in San Francisco. Then he had the drama during his rehab where he decided to throw a bat at a pitcher. Finally came back, but kind of just platooned because like he had such a great 2024 once he was traded over to Seattle. Didn't get to see it because there's only 32 games this past year. Right now, if you like Victor Robles, his ADP is around 350. So he's next to free. But what should we expect from Robles this year? Is he a full-timer? Is he going to put two? Like, just what do you think is going to happen in that situation? Like, you have Canzone out there. You have options, basically, out there.
Yeah. And I think there's definitely a need to fill that kind of third outfielder spot for them. I mean, he could be kind of a cheap source of steals. I feel like there was some optimism, you know, kind of heading into last season with him, you know, before kind of, you know, anything, we realized that there was maybe going to be kind of more of, you know, the postseason run. Cause yeah, he ran pretty wild with the Mariners last year too, right? Like 30 of his 34 stolen bases in 2024. It was just all the health and all the kind of off the field stuff with him and, you know, caused him to miss most of the season. So it was kind of a lost season there, but I mean, he's, you know, it's a cheap source of speed, but I'd be really careful with guys like this. Cause these are the kind of guys that like you just churn cause they're bottom of the third of the lineup, which, you know, that was the most frustrating thing about the Mariners during their like kind of postseason was just like the bottom third of the lineup just couldn't do anything, right? And so if he's in there, it might be kind of ugly, but it might be kind of a, you know, cheap speed option. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a, you know, between when this is published and, you know, when the season starts, if there's not another move to kind of add kind of a corner infielder kind of, or outfielder, sorry, corner outfielder for this team and just kind of see what happens with that. But yeah, I'm not super confident in it. Yeah.
Not Dylan DePoto. He couldn't see him doing that anytime soon. Not at all. Before we go back to JP, I want to ask you about Donovan Canzone while we are sitting in the outfield because I was thoroughly impressed what we saw from Canzone in his 268 plate appearances. He hit 300, 11 homers, really good versus righties. Didn't get a ton of chances versus left-handed pitching. ADP 336. He seems to be a starting outfielder, platoon most likely, but starting outfielder. Where are you at on Dominic Canzone, who still a youngster, maybe still getting his feet wet at the big league level?
Yeah, you know, this is a guy, like, I don't know how many teams have a player where it's a platoon bat, and anytime this guy comes to plate, there's a hand motion for this guy. It's that, like, chef's kiss hand motion, and it's that's just awesome. Like, man, like, you know, but, you know, that aside, he's clearly a fan favorite. Like you're saying, I think the skills are strong. I think that's why, you know, people kind of buy into him. He's got those kind of above average contact rates, and he hits the ball hard. It's just kind of a matter of consistency and regular playing time. You know, at best, he's a strong side platoon option. But, you know, it's, again, it's one of those where he might, you know, you might be rolling him in your lineup and he might be hot. But, you know, if it's not, then it's kind of one of those, like, just kind of wasted, empty profiles unless he's rolling. So, I think the skills are there. I wouldn't be comfortable with the Mariners rolling, you know, him throughout the whole season, but he's going to have his chances for sure, because he's kind of just, you know, he's been solid when he's been in there from a real life standpoint, I'd say.
Sweet. All right, let's go to the man, JP Crawford. It's a real life profile. He's going to be 31. He's kind of an infield leader, defensive leader, team leader type. He had 12 homers last year, second best of his career. 8 steals at 265. JP Crawford is cheap in drafts, 378. It's like desperation mode. Where are you at on JP Crawford this year? Because I know you're really happy if he's at the bottom of the order.
Yeah, another guy that's just like, you know, fan favorite, right? He does a lot of the good real life stuff. I feel like I'd have to check on him. You know, it's like we could argue about defensive numbers, but there are times where on defense, like he wasn't, you know, he was making some kind of unfortunate plays, but from real life standpoint, he's generally kind of been better than kind of that fantasy. Yeah. So like his defensive war kind of really dipped down last year, kind of aligning with that. If I recall when he had kind of that breakout home run season in 2023, when he hit 19 home runs, yeah, he's pulling the ball career high rate. So he's, you know, pulling the ball 43% of the time in 2023. And that kind of dipped back down to like 33-34% over the past few seasons. So, you know, that could be something that he might be kind of working on if we want to get back to the power. But yeah, he's just definitely kind of one of those replaceable guys. But, you know, he does kind of eat up plate appearance when he's healthy, right? Like you look at the past kind of 5 seasons or so, it's over 600 plate appearances. You know, it might only earn him maybe like $5 or $6 of any, you know, value of anything. But so that could be kind of replaceable, but I could see it being one of those where like, it just kind of, you know, draft champions are kind of those easy where, you know, he's going to pretty much play every day. You know, we'll talk later. There might be some guys coming up that might be, you know, yes, stealing some spots, but I mean, he's going to hit bottom third. So you're going to kind of get a plate appearance kind of dip overall. Cause for the most part before he was hitting leadoff or top of the order. So that's something to kind of pay attention to. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of reflected in the, you know, some of the projections are kind of, you know, dipping them back down of what he had last year. So just kind of note that, but, you know, nothing special. I wouldn't be excited to have him on my roster.
Yeah. Like you said, the only place he appeals to me is like a draft champions format as like my third shortstop or whatever. When I see the depth piece that God forbid something happens to the first two guys, yeah. Here comes JP Crawford type situation. That's where he fits in. There might be weeks where you stream him in season just based on certain things, because we have seen him get hot from time to time. Like it'll happen out of nowhere. But yeah, as a whole, not overly thrilled. Any other bats? I didn't put any on here because none of them really appealed to me, but maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, no, those are the only ones I had in my notes that are worth talking about.
All right, let's head to the mound. And man, we're going to start right at the top with the guy that Ryan and I fight about all the time, because Ryan loves Brian. Woo! I still can't get the almost like 2 Tommy John surgeries in one season out of my brain, but he was amazing last year. Brian was simply amazing. 168 and 2/3 innings and 30 starts. Like it's hard to ignore just how good he was. ADP's 39 though. That arm better be healthy at ADP 39. That's where Ryan and I still argue about him. Where are you at on Brian Wu? Like, I'm not going to deny the talent. His college ball was an hour south of me. It was great. But what are your thoughts on Wu?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it looked like his arm was going to fall off in 2024. And then he basically led the Mariners in innings ahead of Luis Castillo. Yeah. So the guy that we were most concerned about health stayed the most healthy. Then Logan Gilbert got hurt. George Kirby got hurt. Bryce Miller. Yep. And he was the last person standing around. But yeah, he ended the season with a pec injury. you know, mid-September. He wasn't on the American League division kind of roster. He pitched in relief in the ALCS, but he wasn't sharp. I mean, he came in and we were like, oh, great, but he wasn't looking very great. So I think I'd kind of pay attention to see kind of where he's at with that. But yeah, this is hard because I feel like in the past he's always kind of maybe been in that ADP 100 range-ish, but now we're going like top 50 picks. We're, oh gosh, just feels like, you know, I don't want to say like a not this level, but I would be worried about kind of like, you know, I think it's going to be a per inning kind of guy, and I don't know if I expect another kind of heavy workload from Brian Wu in 2026. I mean, I would love to see that, but you know, unless there's some way that he keeps kind of keeping his arm healthy, even though it's almost fallen off, then it's fine. But I mean, he has the skills you're looking for, right? Like he's, and I think it's worth, you know, the upside is he's a whip asset, right? He's always been kind of 0.9 or better, or basically under one. You know, he limits hits. He's really great strong control guy, near elite, you know, above average and kind of missing bats, you know, over 13% swing and strike rate. So he has kind of meets those criteria, right? He's got the control, he's got the whiffs. It's just about kind of finishing the season injured and kind of paying attention to that. There used to be this narrative around Brian Wu about kind of really struggling with kind of lefties and stuff like that, but he has been throwing more changeups, and the, you know, he's a command artist, right? I feel like he's kind of one of those guys where like he's just gonna, you know, out command you, and he's just super awesome. So I mean, he showed he can handle the heavy workload. I still think there's some risk, but at the end of the day, and I think we talked about this in the past, is like I'm going to, you know, and this could be wrong because it went real bad last year with injuries, but I'm going to trust the kind of Mariners in terms of pitching and their system. And, you know, if it bites me with Brian Wu, I'm going to be taking some Kirby's and Gilbert's or whatever to kind of just like take a couple of shots of this rotation, because I think we want a piece of this rotation in some regard. So I'd be a little cautious at that price, but you know, could just be one of after some of the injury research, I'm not too keen on guys that like ended the season injured, you know, and already had some issues before. So I'd be a little cautious about some of that stuff.
And that's my thing, is like I'm just like really cautious, but then at the same time, like you did it right there, Ryan's on it. I don't disagree with any of the facts you mentioned about how good he is and the assets he can bring in. You know, maybe he just pitches through these things and he's going to be a beast again, and I'm going to be an idiot looking at like this ace going away. It's just one of those deals. I have to just plant my flag, I guess, and live with it, which I have no problem being wrong on things, but it's just very tough because I see how good Brian Wu is. I'm not talking like an SP3 here. This is an ace that if he's healthy or at least pitches the whole year, he's worth it. But at the same time, you have to pay the ace price. If he gets hurt, ouch. That's not great, but yeah, it's just pick you got to plant your flag, pick your side, and go with it, because like you said, it's a total, it could go either way easily, and risk reward in a big, big way. Logan Gilbert, who you mentioned, got injured last year after throwing 208 innings the year before, 131 innings last year, but still was very good when on the mound. Strikeouts were even higher than usual for Logan Gilbert. I still am a Logan Gilbert fan, of course, and he's going one pick in front of Brian Wu at 38 right now. So they're going back-to-back in drafts over the last 10 drafts. What are we thinking on Logan Gilbert? Like I said, injury-riddled season, little step back in production, but the production was still very good.
Yeah. If I was just kind of, you know, on the clock and picking between these two, I'd probably go Logan Gilbert. Had an elbow injury in late April, kind of caused him to miss 2 months, but you know, was finishing the season healthy and really, again, checks those boxes of the ace. He's got the, you know, career best swing and strike rate last year. He's got that deep arsenal, good enough control, several above average pitches, kind of that elite extension. The only kind of random note I looked at to, you know, besides just being like, he's damn good, is that he threw his splitter kind of 2 miles per hour slower last year. And it was like kind of dropped about 4 more inches. And we saw that kind of swing and strike rate on the splitter go from 21.6% in 2024 to 28.6%. So a 7 percentage point jump in the splitter with the slower, you know, velocity and dropping more. So that kind of all aligns there. So, you know, again, if I was picking between Wu and Gilbert, I'd lean Gilbert.
That's what I've been doing. I've been on the Gilbert train the whole time. But again, both very, very good. George Kirby, injuries last year, production fell off a ton. He had his moments, though, where things looked good. With overall, it was a down season for George Kirby with the injuries and the ratios, which you usually love, fell a bit. But indicators said he should still be better. And sharp drafters are still taking him early, like pick 62. So he's like around the end of round four. So it's not like they're just saying, oh, it's a bad year, he's falling apart. No, people are still believing in George Kirby. Are you believing in George Kirby for 2026?
Yeah, he's an interesting one here, right? So another guy that was durable, got injured, shoulder inflammation in March and kind of, you know, was delayed until May. I think the one interesting note, and this is something where I haven't, you know, quite got a whole lot of information, and I'm kind of just going with like something that kind of theoretically makes sense, is that with the shoulder injury, his arm angle kind of was down 8 degrees in 2025 when it usually was like around 36 degrees. It was under 30. And so we saw the kind of vertical release point kind of go down. And then just kind of his horizontal release point, you know, it goes a little farther away from the midline. And so that kind of helps with the like lower arm angle. So, you know, part of me is like, oh, maybe shoulder injury. Like I'm thinking like, you know, maybe that was part of that or something, but, you know, a couple notable pitch movement things, kind of sweep or slider kind of was sweeping a little more horizontal movement with that lower arm angle, which kind of makes sense. and similar things with other pitches. So part of me was like, you know, maybe the shoulder injury kind of causes kind of those kind of control issues that used to be really elite, and kind of the, you know, being a little more hittable, but those could be kind of a tiny bit, you know, fluky a little bit. So I think there's definitely the potential for kind of a bounce back at that discount of price, because I feel like he used to be more where kind of, you know, Gilbert and Wu are right now, so maybe there's a kind of a tiny bit discount, but you know, I like him at the price regardless, but he's kind of one of those guys that you kind of have to, you know, realize that he might be kind of a ratio asset, but he might not give you kind of the overall volume of strikeouts for, you know, a guy. So
yeah, he was an accumulator for a while, so if he's gonna have to tone it down a little bit, that could definitely affect things a tad bit. Let's talk Bryce Miller. Stop me if you heard this. Another injury riddle season, like you said, with the Seattle Mariners pitching staff. Miller only threw 90 innings after throwing 180 in 2024. He saw the strikeouts go down. He saw the ratios go through the roof. It was rough watching him pitch. Like there wasn't a lot of confidence when Bryce Miller took the mound last year. ADP's 254, though. Like if we believe he can start finding things again, that's a very affordable price, Corbin.
Yeah. This guy was on the injured list a ton, you know, right elbow inflammation in middle of May, back to the IL after coming back for 2 weeks with the same injury in June and then returning in August. Another guy like Kirby, where kind of the arm angle dipped a little bit, and, you know, just again, some of the horizontal vertical release points changing a tiny bit. You know, again, one of my guesses is like, well, maybe that was a little more comfortable with kind of some of those elbow injuries. I will say when I saw him pitch in the postseason in game one, I was a little worried because I was like, we're putting out our worst starting pitcher for game one of the ALCS. And it went okay. Could have been worse. I think one thing I noted when I was researching, because I must have forgot this kind of after playoffs are done, but he had one of the platelet rich plasma injections kind of in the hurt pitching elbow, and there's a note that there's a bone spur, and so like it looks like, you know, based on my super smart Google research, it looks like those plasma injections, you know, that I went to school for are supposed to help with healing and relieving pain with inflammation. But you know, when they say a bone spur, I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's something, you know, maybe there's kind of a surgery to remove that. I mean, I didn't do a whole ton of research on like, well, how many pitchers pitch with bone spurs, but that seems a tiny bit concerning. But yeah, gosh, he's such a weird pitcher. I used to really like him kind of based on some of the pitch metrics and stuff like that, but some of the skills have kind of not been so enticing. But it's one of those where it's so much later than we're used to, I may take a chance, you know, but knowing that it could be pretty rocky.
Yeah, because at least at 254, if it goes wrong, he's an easy drop. You don't have to worry about it. Like, it is what it is. But like the postseason start was good. Maybe the injection helps a ton. I think a lot of guys, it feels like, to, just back in my brain, that they do get the bone spur removed via surgery at some point. But maybe with this new technology, they can just do other things. Who knows? But at his price point, I could see a world where taking a chance could pay off. I have not yet, but I could see where that is an option. The fifth starter in this rotation, which even with all the injuries last year, the Mariners had the same stud fives coming back, which is pretty impressive. Luis Castillo, the veteran, the father, the grandfather of the group, is coming back for his age 33 season, and he is just as steadily boring as they come, but it's like very, very good stuff from Luis Castillo. His ADP is 157. Like the innings, the ratios, the strikeouts, it's just you can almost write it down and you're going to be pretty close by the end of the season. So where are we at on Castillo as he again enters his age 33 season?
Yeah, he continues to be a pretty durable arm, kind of discounted for kind of what most of the price indicate. You know, I mean, you know, 4.08 xERA is kind of the worst of his career, but if we could get an ERA on four, it's not the worst thing in the world, kind of that price, kind of based on the volume and some of the strikeout skills. Yeah, he definitely doesn't have kind of the dominant stuff like he used to in the past. Still some above average skills. We've seen kind of the skills decline across the board. So I think there's some concern. You know, I think it's hard to find volume probably at this ADP, kind of, you know, regardless if some of the skills have taken a slight step back. So I'd take a chance on kind of a pitcher with this track record with some decent skills, you know, for looking around pick 150 or so. I mean, kind of based on that volume projection.
Yeah, I'm becoming quite the fan of him just as I look at the other pitchers in that pool, like in that area. Just the consistency he brings. Like, there's probably some higher upside arms there if you want to go that way, but just that kind of steady, consistent. I'm starting to embrace that a little more as draft season and I guess as I get older as well. Let's head to the bullpen to one of the best closers in baseball, and Andrés Muñoz picked up 38 saves last year in 62 innings. It was the first season it feels like where it was 100% his job. He kind of got yo-yoed in previous season. He got it. He took the ball. He ran with it. Absolute monster season. ADP is 33 right now. He's like the third or fourth reliever off the board. Relievers are pushed super high right now, Corbin. It's just a weird world. But what are your thoughts on Munoz entering this year? It should just be his ball once again, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty elite season, you know, accounting for 88% of the team saves. Yeah. I felt like even just kind of watching how they deployed the rest of the bullpen, they had a pretty kind of consistent, you know, just like he's always there. There's no messing around. You know, maybe he might have came in, you know, maybe in the eighth or, you know, with one or two outs if there was just some crucial situation kind of thing. But yeah, he's the guy. I mean, you know, I don't really think that they're gonna kind of mess around with the kind of save opportunities there. So yeah, I feel like I'm pretty confident in, you know, kind of even at this price. I know this is kind of just where the, you know, price for closers are, but, you know, I think the slider got even nastier last year. So I really like the price and kind of just, you know, we're looking for a pretty secure closer for sure.
In the unforeseen event that Munoz, something happens, let's put it that way. We don't want this to happen. But if it does, are we looking at Matt Brash or are we looking for the new Jose Ferrer who was picked up?
Yeah, I mean, Brash is clearly the guy towards the end of the season whenever we return is kind of the eighth inning guy. You know, he has a kind of prototypical kind of high stuff, poor control guy. So, I think his kind of pitches kind of evolve late in the season. And a guy that, you know, he can be pretty shaker, but he's got closer stuff. Yeah, first glance, Jose Ferrer is definitely a guy that, you know, I was surprised when kind of Mariners move Harry forward, and maybe it's just mostly name value and stuff like that. But, you know, I kind of remembered when this trade kind of went down to get Jose Ferrer, I was a little kind of like, what? But, you know, I remember talking to kind of Chris Clegg a tiny bit, and then I was like, just kind of like looking at their bullpen, and I was like, the Mariners really don't have any lefty relievers, right? They have Gabe Spire. And so I think Ferrer's kind of, you know, they really lack kind of a lefty reliever in their bullpen. It kind of fits the mold what they're looking for. Just kind of this hard throwing guy with a nasty changeup, you know, sinker slider from that lower arm angle. So, yeah, I think he, you know, could mix in there, kind of, you know, maybe fight for kind of that eighth inning role with Brash. And but he's got the skills. So, I, you know, Fur might be more of kind of that kind of draft champions, you know, pick if, you know, things just went wrong and Munoz missed time. I think Brash definitely has the leg up, just kind of safe chances. But, you know, Ferrer might be a guy that's definitely, you know, kind of worth stashing kind of based on those skills and kind of based on the need for a kind of lefty reliever that, you know, might need to be kind of relied more upon in the kind of the latter half of the game for sure.
Perfect. Good to know. All right, let's talk prospects. I have a hunch I know who you're talking about when it might be a shortstop or maybe even third base replacement at some point. What prospects could we potentially be seeing this year?
Yeah, I mean, Colt Emerson is definitely the top name to know, right? I mean, you know, he's already kind of been rumored to be by some of the kind of Seattle sports kind of beat reporters that, you know, there's a chance he could earn a chance on an opening day roster. There's clearly a need at third base, right? We can't go to enter the season with Ben Williamson as our third baseman, or that'd be a little worrisome without Eugenio Suarez unless he gets brought back or something to kind of clog it up. The kind of Mariners kind of single A team is around where we're at, and we kind of watched kind of the Aqua Sox play and saw Emerson in person. I mean, they've got quite a few guys that they've moved up pretty quickly to kind of when they're in single A to double A. And, you know, Colt Emerson was a tiny bit, you know, 27 later for instance, triple A. So, you know, I mean, brief sample of triple A, you know, 93.6 mile per hour average exit velocity there, but yeah, he's a guy that I think can really push for some infield reps. I think he's, you know, mainly a shortstop, but wouldn't be surprised if they try to work in him at third base to get him some reps. Like I said earlier, the bottom third of this lineup is pretty concerning. And so, you know, if we're looking at all these other teams, and I know the Mariners aren't like this, but the other teams are paying for bats and bats and bats. And so, you know, I mean, just, I mean, not that we need to do that, but, you know, if we're going to just hang out and hope that, you know, the bottom of third just magically gets better, I mean, we're gonna need to do that with some of the prospects at some point. So Colt Emerson is one guy for sure. Let me talk about a few other guys.
Yep, go for it. Who else you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think another guy that was on the Aqua Sox team, Michael Arroyo, he might be a little later, but he's more of kind of a second baseman option. He's definitely got the ability to hit. There was some talks about him maybe taking some outfield reps to get some positional flexibility and stuff like that, which, like I mentioned earlier with the Victor Robles thing or the Canzone, there's definitely a need at kind of the third outfield spot. He's got some power and speed, so just kind of some guy to maybe monitor, kind of, you know, mid-season waiver wire guy. I don't know if he's going to get there, but Lazaro Montes is another kind of just got to just drool over. This guy's 6'5", 210 pounds, you know, it's got a bunch of raw power, you know, kind of pull heavy fly ball approach. I think the hit tools are going to be the biggest concern. So he might be like a big strikeout guy, but, you know, contact and in terms of hard hit stuff is allowed for sure. So those are the three guys, Colt Emerson, Michael Royal, Lazaro Montes, in terms of kind of, you know, more impactful, maybe within the range of, you know, being on the roster at some point this year.
Yeah, I would love to see Montes there. I think it's a late season, if anything, this year, just because I don't know, when he made that jump last year, it slowed down, but I'm with you. Like, I think it could happen, and if it does, oh my goodness, is the way I look at it. It's going to be awesome. So I'm hoping that happens. Emerson's the one that, yeah, if they don't bring a third baseman in, like, he needs to be starting at third base. Just like it just needs to be the case.
Yeah.
Time will tell. Time will tell.
Yeah.
Last question I have for you. What are your expectations for the 2026 season?
I mean, pretty high after last year, right? I think, you know, I like that they re-signed Naylor. But again, you know, top half of the lineup looks great. I like that a lot. You know, pitching is pretty stable. I think it's the biggest questions are going to be how consistent can we get the bottom third of the lineup. But I do like the way the rotation's setting up. You know, I, as just kind of a jaded Mariners fan, sometimes I'm always worried about the Astros, you know, just kind of how it goes. You know, the Rangers kind of, you know, come up here and there, but I've got some pretty high expectations for them. You know, I think playoffs are kind of like something we're expecting based on kind of last year, but you know, we'll see kind of what other moves they make. I do like some of the moves they've made kind of at trade deadline, where they're not kind of just like totally just giving up a ton of stuff to get what they need. But I mean, they, you know, they haven't been making as many moves, but I like the Ferrer move. I think, you know, just the Naylor thing is kind of what they need. So we'll see if we can, you know, Emerson takes a spot in the bottom third, or they add kind of a third baseman or second baseman to kind of give a little bit of depth. Cause that was something we talked about last year too, just the lack of depth. Like, you know, yeah. I don't really want Leo Rivas, or, you know, no offense, but Rob Refsnyder or Luke Rayleigh really being guys that we're relying on. So that's, you know, the depth is definitely the concern in this lineup.
Yeah, that's what when I look at their roster, I'm like, man, starting lineup's pretty good. Don't get hurt, because it's a little bleak down there for sure. But there's still plenty of time. It's mid-January. If anybody's going to be active on the phones to make moves, it's DePoto. So you're going to be just fine up there. But all right, before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on these days.
Yeah, you can find me on X, Twitter, Corbin_Young21. I've got my first kind of Facts and Flukes article with Baseball HQ coming out this weekend, kind of kicking off the, you know, off-season rotation here. So by the time this podcast comes out, there should be one kind of on the site. You know, I'm kind of doing a tiny bit with Rotoballer here and there, is really, you know, as we all switch kind of our brains here to kind of baseball here. But yeah, that's mostly where the work's happening. And yeah, thanks for having me on, and always good chatting Mariners and baseball in general.
Yeah, always great chatting with you, man. I'm glad we got to do this again this year, and I'm rooting for you, because it means my co-host is always happy, and B, it's just, the Mariners are a fun team, man. They're a really fun team, and like you said, just from the TV, the atmosphere there was awesome. So like, I'd love to see some more of that in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm pretty sure you would as well. So yeah, we'll be rooting for you.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, make sure you follow Corbin on Twitter. And until next time, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 816, your 2026 Seattle Mariners team preview. Catch you all next time.